Coming up, the role of religion in U.S. foreign policy. Kim Lawton talks to the head of a special State Department office. Also, Lucky Severson on one city's way to help the homeless. Apparently, it's working. Plus, as the Jewish high holidays begin, we visit a pop-up synagogue in New York that helps people prepare spiritually, or as they call it, prepent.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Welcome, I'm Bob Abernethy. It's good to have you with us. Religious groups were among those weighing in on this week's presidential debate. The Interfaith Alliance expressed disappointment with what it saw as, quote, the further coarsening of political language, incivility, and degradation that emerged in many of the exchanges. The Christian group Bread for the World was disappointed by a lack of attention to hunger and poverty, and urged the candidates to talk about those issues in the upcoming debates. Meanwhile, the Archdiocese of New York announced this week that both the candidates will appear with Cardinal Timothy Dolan at the annual charity Al Smith Dinner on October 20th. Democratic vice presidential candidate Tim Kaine visited a megachurch in Orlando and met with Latino evangelical leaders. Switching between English and Spanish, Kaine recalled his time as a Catholic missionary in Honduras.
I really learned about the power of faith from my friends in El Progreso, Honduras. Faith, family, hard work, basic valores americanos.
On the Republican side, several religious supporters of Donald Trump were at the Capitol this week to push a new bill before Congress that would allow houses of worship to endorse political candidates. Trump has repeatedly called for such a measure.
Government bureaucrats should not be bouncers at the doorway to freedom of speech and freedom of religion.
Also in Washington, a coalition of faith-based pro-life activists kicked off a 40-day, 18,000-mile-long national bus tour to mobilize people to their cause. Leaders said they wanted to call attention to the issue of abortion before the election. A new United Nations report says the recent police killings of black people in the United States are reminiscent of the lynchings African Americans experienced in the 19th and 20th centuries. The UN Working Group report said the U.S. government should do far more to protect African Americans. According to the report, the root of the problem is that police are rarely held accountable for their actions. The criticism comes as new protests erupted this week in Southern California after police fatally shot an unarmed black man who appeared to be mentally unstable. That shooting came after two black men were killed by police in Charlotte, North Carolina, and Tulsa, Oklahoma. Shimon Peres, the former president and prime minister of Israel and recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize, died this week. He was 93. Religious leaders remembered Peres for his work on the Oslo Accords and as a champion of the two-state solution in which Israelis and Palestinians would coexist in peace. Pope Francis recalled the time Peres visited the Vatican. The Pope said he had great appreciation for the late president's tireless efforts in favor of peace. Humanitarian groups are raising alarms about the devastating toll of this week's escalated fighting in Aleppo, Syria. The UN describes it as the worst bombing yet in the country's five-year-long civil war. Hospitals and food distribution points have been hit by airstrikes. Only a small number of doctors remain in the area, and they are not able to keep up with all the wounded. Aid groups say food and medical supplies are running dangerously low. A disproportionately high number of children are among the victims. Pope Francis renewed his calls for an end to the violence. In a meeting with aid groups, he said the perpetrators will be, quote, accountable to God for their action. The Pope is visiting the countries of Georgia and Azerbaijan this week to focus on interreligious dialogue and reconciliation. Francis met with the Orthodox Patriarch of Georgia as well as the local Chaldean Catholic community. And in Azerbaijan, he's spending time with a key Muslim leader. The Pope's visit follows his June trip to Armenia, where he appealed for peace and religious freedom in the Caucasus region. The U.S. State Department this week hosted a conference on religion and diplomacy. Clergy, faith-based activists, and diplomats attended. Critics have long charged that the U.S. has not done a good job in acknowledging the role of religion in foreign policy, but many say that's now changed thanks to the work of a new State Department office. Kim Lawton reports.
In a keynote speech at the State Department this week, White House Chief of Staff Dennis McDonough said the Obama administration understands that religion matters in foreign policy.
Religious beliefs provide a source of identity and a sense of community. They play a fundamental role in inculcating moral codes and in molding worldviews. As such, religious beliefs are a powerful force in our thinking and in our work.
That represents a significant attitude shift among policymakers. According to many observers, for decades, the State Department tended to downplay the role of religion in foreign affairs. 3 years ago, Secretary of State John Kerry established the new Office of Religion and Global Affairs to address those concerns.
We need to recognize that in a world where people of all faiths are migrating and mingling like never before, where we are this global community, which we always talk about, we ignore the global impact of religion, in my judgment, at our peril.
Kerry appointed Sean Casey, a Christian ethicist from Wesley Theological Seminary, to lead the office.
At the point I was hired by Secretary Kerry, there was a sense that the State Department had not been as effective as it could have been. But it's one thing to say you've got a problem. It's another thing to say, well, here's the solution to your problem. And that's why our office was created, to provide strategies and techniques and resources for our embassies and posts to be more effective at understanding religious dynamics around the world.
With a staff of 30, the office also advises the secretary and collaborates with other State Department offices on matters related to religion. It has become a key entry point for religious leaders and faith-based activists who want to connect with the U.S. government. Casey says he and his team have interacted with thousands of faith-based people across the globe.
One of the things we discovered very early on in our existence, that there was pent-up demand, both in the United States but also globally, for various religious actors and communities to come and engage with the State Department to learn about our foreign policy and learn how they might be able to help us be successful by partnering with them around the world. So I knew the demand was high. I was really quite overwhelmed early on to see exactly how high that level of interest is.
The office is focused on several issue areas. A major one has been helping to address the global refugee crisis. They partner with U.S.-based faith groups helping to resettle refugees here, but also those working overseas.
Without the local congregations and temples and mosques and synagogues collaborating together, we're not going to find a place for 65 million displaced people around the world. If the religious communities don't participate, those people are going to be staying in refugee camps their entire lives.
Prior to the UN Climate Change Conference in Paris last year, the office strategized with religious advocacy groups that supported an international treaty. It collaborated with interfaith leaders in Nigeria to develop a project aimed at fighting government corruption. And the team has spent much time helping the U.S. improve its relations with predominantly Muslim countries.
Workshops and trainings around the Muslim world, trying to demonstrate our interest in those countries and what they're doing, trying to partner with them on economics and on countering violent extremism and a host of other issues.
While Casey believes his office has accomplished a lot in 3 years, he admits it remains a challenge at times to get religious concerns addressed in the complex foreign policy agenda.
This is an age of chaos in the international system. We've seen a global displacement of over 65 million people. That's unprecedented in the history of the planet. We've seen a movement towards mitigating and adapting to climate change. So the level of crisis around the world has really been quite surprising to see. But coupled with that has been the energy and the willingness of religious communities to help us address those. So those are two, I think, of the biggest surprises.
What is going to happen with this office and this effort after this administration is done?
Well, I'm an academic and I'm a political appointee, so at the end of the Obama administration, I will go back to academia. But the office will convey. Most of our staff will stay here and they will be here into the next administration.
He urges the next administration to not only continue the work, but expand it.
It would be tragic, I think, if somehow we abandon that and walk away from it because of the success we've had. I think whoever succeeds me is going to have the greatest job in the world.
And given the world situation, he believes the office will be all the more important moving forward. I'm Kim Lawton in Washington.
All over this country, cities are wrestling with the problem of how well-meaning people can help the homeless. Feed them, move them out of town, arrest them. We have a story today about a program in Albuquerque, New Mexico that seems to be working. The secret, the mayor's idea, is to round up at least some of the people on the street and give them paying jobs. Lucky Severson reports.
If I had a business, a lot of these ladies and gentlemen that we help, yeah, I'd hire them in a second.
Will Cole is a transplant from Chicago, now driving a van for the city of Albuquerque, out trolling for panhandlers. Those ladies and gentlemen he wants to help are homeless, most by fate, some by design.
I don't know, they kind of fall into a rut, kind of, as far as this homeless thing, and it's hard for them to get out of it. And I think this program is like a little helpful push.
This program, in its second year, is called There's a Better Way, and it's unlike most programs in the U.S. today.
It pays $9 an hour for a five-hour shift.
Albuquerque is hiring the homeless. That's Will Cole's job. He's a big guy, the kind you'd like to have on your side.
It seems like at every turn, they're getting judged. At every turn, they're going to get, you know, talked down to and stuff. How are you, sir? You want to go to work?
Yes, sir.
At first, he was searching out panhandlers only 2 days a week, but the budget has been increased, so now it's four. His limit is six panhandlers each day. It's easy to spot the Better Way van. It's towing its own porta potty. The work is usually not in the part of town that has restrooms. It's nearer the streets and fields where the homeless, like John, reside.
There's a lot of dislike for us that we're just, you know, worthless creatures that really shouldn't be alive, you know?
Living a panhandler's life is not easy. This is Gabriella.
Those nights must get pretty long and dark when you're staying in your car, huh?
It's something I'll never forget, that's for sure.
The trend the past few years throughout the U.S. has been to criminalize homelessness. A 2014 report by the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty found that the number of cities imposing fines and fees for lying down, sitting up, eating, sleeping, camping, begging, had increased sharply since 2011. The center also found that at least 50 cities had made it a crime to even feed the homeless.
As we grow as human beings, we will discover that these are not criminals. These are people with problems that, God forbid, any one of us could be pushed over that edge at any moment.
Susan Simons is the acting executive director of St. Martin's Hospitality Center, a nonprofit that has long served the needs of the homeless. St. Martin's was recruited by Mayor Richard Berry to run the Better Way. It was his idea.
And I said, listen, prohibiting it is not ending it. It hasn't to this point. It hasn't in any country that, or in any city that I know of. Why don't we try something different? The man says he needs a job. Let's give him a job.
And so they did.
We'll get a garbage truck over here. We only got a little time left, so let's get rolling.
How many people have you worked with?
Over 900.
Any of those found permanent work?
We have connected right around 120 of these individuals with some kind of permanent employment, yes.
What kind of grade would you give the city of Albuquerque for the way it's handling homelessness?
C.
Jeremy Reynolds founded and runs a faith-based homeless shelter called Joy Junction. It houses as many as 300 on any given night. He's been working with the homeless most of his adult life.
We see an uptick in the amount of homeless. We see an uptick in the amount of hungry. We definitely see almost an increase in a swarm-like proportion to the number of panhandlers. And obviously, they're the most visible people when it comes to homelessness in need.
He thinks the mayor's program may, in fact, be attracting homeless, which currently number anywhere from 1,200 to perhaps 8,000 when you include their children. It's impossible to know for sure.
We don't have any evidence we're attracting anybody with this program. I mean, this is hard work. This is shovels and rakes out in the hot sun.
This program, again, totally fails to deal with, recognize, or offer to provide any answers to, again, people who are unable to work.
Or don't want to work, as is sometimes the case. Reynolds says many, if not most, homeless simply can't handle a job, especially full-time work, that they need help for whatever mental or substance abuse issues they have, or they'll stay homeless.
At first glance, it looks like we're trying to eliminate panhandling in the
St. Martin's Kelly Tillerson.
But that's not the overall goal. The overall goal is to get people connected to services that they didn't even know were available. We are doing that.
At lunchtime, our employees come out from behavioral health, from different departments, and they talk to them, and we try to direct them to those people so they can get themselves together as best they can.
Get on the ground! Get on the ground! Don't make fun of people!
In early 2014, Albuquerque police shot and killed an unarmed homeless man. Two officers were charged in the killing. That kind of incident is less likely today, in part because of the influence of the Better Way program. At least that's the view of Kelly Tillerson.
Since the mayor started this program, the Albuquerque Police Department has been briefed on what's going on, and we've had them pull up in the police cruiser to drop people off at St. Martin's because they are in need of service. Rather than putting them in jail for a minor crime, they are now being connected to the services that will help them get out of that predicament.
We'll do that. How's it going, man?
Pretty good.
Everyone agrees that the program works as well as it does because of Will Cole. He's never been to college, one of seven kids, always had to work. And now he defends people who stand on the street corner begging against those who think panhandlers should be arrested.
All right, sir, first and last.
I think you got two groups. You have the sympathetic group, and then you have the group that's going to judge and yell at people on corners. And if those people, they're wasting a lot of energy trying to complain about people and things like that. So maybe they should put that energy into trying to help out.
One of the homeless is Joe. He says when he's back on his feet, he has learned to be more compassionate to people in need.
Since I've been homeless and I see somebody else that's homeless that don't have no pair of pants or socks or anything, and I'll have it, I'll give it to them, you know, or water or food, you know. That's just the way I feel.
If you follow these crews around, this isn't easy street here. You know, we're asking people to work hard.
Come on in. Ouch.
At the end of the five-hour day, they collect $45 in cash, and they can spend it any way they choose. Some intend to get a room for the night and a shower. Most, like John, say they'll jump in a van again.
I think it's awesome. Too bad we couldn't do it more days a week. And it gives me a sense of accomplishment, you know.
I hope that we can continue to do it. I think that's the biggest thing as far as I'm concerned, that it can continue. Because some programs, a lot of times you see programs come and go. So hopefully we can keep this going.
For now at least, the people of Albuquerque seem to feel more comfortable hiring the homeless than arresting them. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Lucky Severson in Albuquerque.
The U.S. Postal Service announced that the late Father Theodore Hesburgh, longtime president of the University of Notre Dame, will appear on a commemorative stamp. The U.S. Postal Service noted Hesburgh's leadership in the civil rights movement. The stamp is set to be released next year. On our calendar, Hindus begin observing one of their most popular holidays, the nine-night festival of Navratri, which is devoted to the deity Durga and her various manifestations. Durga represents the divine forces used against evil. It's a time of special prayers, fasting, and parties. And Jews begin observing their high holidays with Rosh Hashanah, the new year, which starts at sundown on Sunday. In Jerusalem, as is traditional, the Western Wall's chief rabbi got ready for the new year by clearing out notes to God left in the wall's cracks. The notes are then buried at the Mount of Olives. Many Jews have been spending time preparing for Rosh Hashanah and the upcoming Yom Kippur, or Day of Atonement. We visited the Lab Shul community in New York City, an innovative pop-up synagogue that meets in various locations. The community's founder, Rabbi Amichai Lau Lavi, holds what he calls a boot camp filled with workshops and music to encourage spiritual preparation for repentance, or as he calls it, pre-penting before the holidays.
Lab Shul is an experimental arena for how we reimagine spirituality in the 21st century for Jews and all those who are with them who are not necessarily Jewish. We are everybody friendly, which means everybody is invited to be part of the community, and we are God optional, which means we do not take for granted that people have faith. We meet in wineries and in theaters, in galleries and studios. We want to go all over the city and see where people are and meet them where they're at, as opposed to them coming to us. So we're doing what every Jewish generation has done. We're reinventing ourselves to speak to today's needs. And it's a process of give and take. We're keeping some things, we're retranslating some things. So we are igniting our lives as humans using the Jewish toolbox to make what we inherited work for today.
All right, go boot camp!
We thought of doing a boot camp because boot camp is a way to just really take this seriously, so that it's not just about rote, autopilot, mumble prayers, show up. It's a much deeper, mystical, spiritual, personal process. People are invited to come think about life coaching skills, to be more present with their dreams, to learn about the shofar and what is this primal sound that we are hearing and try really play with it. We're here to look at foods from honey to beets and how the, you know, gastro-Judaic is part of how we connect to our better selves. And a whole bunch of other ways to boot camp ourselves into more consciousness at this time of year. So in Hebrew, the word teshuvah defines this period. Teshuvah is the Hebrew for both return, like return again to the same place, but also reply, as in an answer to your question. The mystics say the question is the existential question, Ayeka, where are you? That is what the divine asks Adam and Eve in the garden. Where are you? Are you accountable? Are you present? Are you living the life you were meant to live? So that's the question. And the answer is the teshuvah say, okay, yes. Oh my God, I've woken up. I spent a whole year on autopilot. Who am I? Am I living up to my virtues? Am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing? My addictions, my failings, my rages, my late night emails, whatever I'm doing that's not keeping me happy. Okay, how do I get back on track? So teshuvah is the annual process of saying second chances are possible. It's about a month of taking time to say, I'm sorry, to myself, to others. Who am I fighting? Who am I not talking with? What debts do I have? What do I really want to reflect on to start a year with intentionality? Forgive me. It's all that you Talmudic saying, repent the day before you die. Do teshuva the day before you die. And of course, the paradox is, you don't know when you're going to die. Exactly. So do your work today.
Human being, rise, rise, rise.
It is an invitation for introspection, for honesty, for reconnection. And that is the response to the question, where are you? Hineni, here I am.
That's our program for now. I'm Bob Abernethy. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Watch us anytime on the PBS app for iPhones and iPads. There's also much more on our website where you can listen to or watch every program. Join us at pbs.org/religionethics. As we leave you, more music from the Lab Shul Community Boot Camp.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Be more. PBS.